of saw why you would get this twisted perceived. So just to remind you, so you would have this category, and then your twisted perceived happened because you allowed the group also to act on this base category, and so you would get, for example, the spectrum of not this base category, but something, some equivalent, unitary equivalent category, algebra. Okay, so now we're trying to find a way to fix this problem. Now, this action here was defined through this geometric morphism. Well, I'll write sheaves or presheaves interchangeably now, right? I mean, we know that they're the same things in this context. And because of this geometric morphism, then the group action was like this. So it did act on context eventually. And this is why you got your twists. So now we want to avoid this twist. One thing to do is to change this base category. And how do you change it? So imagine now, instead of having that base category, you still have that category there, but now you assume that there is no group action in it. It's exactly the same. It has all the same elements, so also elements which would be related by group transformation, but you just say that this category, you can't act on it with a group. Just an assumption. And then you want to switch categories. I mean, they're the same, so you don't do much. It's just that conceptually now you have a perceive. You get exactly the same perceives, but the only difference is that now you cannot act. Well, that was the action of the group. Yeah, you don't have it. You cannot act with the group. So in theory, by not having a group action on the base category, in theory, you could define a perceive in which you don't get the twist. However, you can't just take this category and then define your perceives. Because if you did that, this is way too static. You don't have any group action at all. Because where's the group going to act? So you need to go through two steps process. And in particular, you want to do something as follows. So you do want your very base to be fixed. Again, if you do that, if you do not allow any group action here, it's impossible to go from one context to another, to group transformation. You just do not allow it, so you don't get the twist. However, you still want to have a group action. So you need to define some intermediate category up here. Call it C. We don't know what it is yet. But you need something up here on which the group does act. And then you use this intermediate category to define your presheaves over this, and then you pull everything down. In order for this to make sense, this category somehow has to be defined as a bundle, so to say, where for each context V, you have a set of elements. C1, C2, C4. And the same here. Cetera, et cetera. Which, if you forget this should be, we will see this should be a category. In fact, it should be a poset. But seen as something over this, it has to be, well, it will be a presheaf, but it will be a presheaf such that for each context it gets a collection of elements. And then what you require is that the group which does act here simply acts along the fibers. So that now this thing is fixed, there's no group action whatsoever. The group action is on this level, it just goes up and down. Nothing happens to the context. So even for each context, the group never switches. We'll see what this is. Now, given this intermediate category, which its existence will be physically motivated, what you then do is that for a second you forget about this, and although these are defined as kind of fibers, you can still see them just as a collection of objects, right? So then you forget about this, and then for each of this object, you define your presheaf. So for each of the fiber, you get a collection. Let's call this P. Or whatever, some presheaf. And again here, and again here, etc., etc. So then now, okay, so here you have this thing. Then through some functor, you map everything down, so that now you have defined your presheaf in two stages by utilizing this intermediate category. But now you see it as a presheaf over this. So for each V, you get this as a well-defined presheaf. And now you see, because the group acts here, all that it will do will map these things here around by switching from this to this. But it will never go here. So by doing all this process with this intermediate category, then you can define a group action which doesn't produce these twists.
So does that mean that we have morphisms from the presheaf of, say, C1 to the presheaf of C2 prime?
Up here, right? See, you will have, so this guy is going to go like this. This guy is going to go like this, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. And we'll see exactly how they're done, but they respect something here. But yeah, you do get a really well-defined presheaf. Often you have to get a correct category here. Yeah. This is, I'm just trying to give the conceptual note to the detail. But yeah, so you get maps, and you also get group action, but you never get this twist. So that's the idea. How do you do it? So first of all, you need to figure out what category this guy might be. Now, because you want this to be such that whatever elements related by group transformation all belong to the same fiber, you eventually want this category to be the bundle space of some bundle over this. And in particular, you would want it to actually be a presheaf. So in order to define this category, we're going to introduce a new presheaf. I don't think I ever call it anything. Well, I'll just call it faithful representation, sheaf or presheaf. This will help us define this guy here. So what is this? So we denote it as follows for a reason that will become clear. Well, actually, let's first call it something. Well, let's first call it something else. So we are in this situation. So we have this category. We now have changed. We're working with that base category. And we had our original one. We want to define a map between these two. And we do it such that we define a homomorphism which represents a representation. Okay, so for each algebra, you basically define a representation of that algebra in this for some group element. So you have a group G. And for all elements, you define a representation. So for all of them, yeah? Moreover, you restrict this representation to be faithful. So you end up with a collect for each V that belong now to the fixed guy, you end up with a collection of faithful representations. So it's homomorphous from this guy to V of H. So you need this because we're talking about homomorphism. So homomorphism can only happen between two posets. So you need to you can't just say V. That wouldn't make sense. So it has to respect the internal structures, has to be a poset. This you can do for each V. So what it means that if you consider all V's, then you end up with a presheaf such that for all V, you get the local component, which is simply that. I'm going to stop writing faithful. So this is the object. And the morphism and you get donor of V, V H goes to donor of V prime V of H. So a map here for some G, you basically simply restrict it now to act on this restriction. So picture. So what happens here is now for each algebra you get all those guys. For each a map which represents a faithful representation. So you can already start seeing that if you did act with the group, go up and down here. Now another way of seeing this, and that is why I wrote G slash GF, is the following, which immediately equips each fiber with a topology. So that is, I mean, conceptually to each context, you basically associate all the faithful representations of that algebra. And you do it that for each algebra, and you can define maps between them. That's fine. Another way of saying this, though, is the following. So a faithful representation, right, so for each V, a representation is faithful if for each group element it assigns some transformation of V, and this map is injective. So, well, you know what injective is. however, for each group V, there is something called a stability group. Right? So for each group, for each algebra V, there's something called a stability group, a fixed point group, sorry, which is basically all those elements of your group which leave the algebra unchanged by not changing anything at all. So you get something like this. So this is a subgroup of your stability group. The stability group just maps your algebra to your algebra, but it changes things inside. The fixed point group doesn't change anything at all.
Do you require that each element group is the same one, or just the general element?
For the fixed point group, each element has to go to the same one. For the stability group, then it's the other way around. So GV is all those. All you require here is this. This is all you require. This, it just tells you don't change anything at all. So yeah, so the fixed point group is a subgroup of your stability. So given this, because you want this guy to be injective, if you have two elements here which belong to the stability group, then although they're different, they would pick exactly the same representation once applied to V. So what this means is that the collection of all faithful representations, so all hom faithful in Danner V to V of H, is actually isomorphic to the entire group G, but now factored with your stability fixed point group. Because for each element in here, then you do get a unique faithful representation, because you require that thing to be injected. So if this is the case, then it turns out that you can define now a pre-sheaf as follows, or a sheaf, whatever, such that for all elements, you get this, which this is now equivalence class, so is G dot G F of V. Those elements. And to each of this, so the equivalence class, from now on, I'm going to write it like this. So an element here, which is precisely this G dot G. Is now an equivalence class. But to each equivalence class, there corresponds a unique faithful representation. So yeah, so for each G, these two are the same. So for each equivalence class, you get a unique faithful representation. What are the morphisms? Well, they're obviously something that will reproduce this. But what are they? So if you have, then you get something. It goes. Yep. What is this? Now I'm going to write it and then I'll explain it. So what it does, it picks an equivalence class here and then it maps it for the same G to now an equivalence class in here. Now to understand this, the first thing to note is the following, that if this is the case, then the stability groups actually have the opposite relation, right? Because if the stability group of this algebra leaves everything fixed here, hence is going to leave everything fixed in any subalgebra. The inverse is not true. So there's an inclusion relation. So what means is that you can now see this map as a bundle map as follows. I'll first write and then I explain. So you can get a bundle with this fiber. So how does that thing look like? Oh, where should I go? Here. Yeah. So because of this, then this guy will have some more elements than this guy. So you end up with something like this. There's WGV, WG prime V, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. This is G plus G F of V. And here you will have G1 of G dot G2, and this is WG, prime. Et cetera, et cetera. And all these elements here will be the ones that are in GV, F of V, but not in here. So let's call this phi of GV. So that fiber will contain GI dot. For all GI, which belong to GF of V prime, but do not belong to GF of V. Is that clear? Do you understand? Not quite.
Lost at the end.
Yeah. Well, which bit? Just tell me. You can stop me.
I guess I understand the definition of the G sub F pre-sheaf, but I'm not sure if we get the morphisms in
G sub F.
In G quotient GF. Right? I don't understand the morphisms.
Is this projection maps?
Yeah.
Okay, so. So far it's good, right? So this guy is bigger. Mm-hmm. So now if you just consider this, this will contain, let me just draw it, but let's start again. So you now just consider this. This will contain. For each G in big G, it will have some equivalence class. And the amount of, for each G in this big one, you get an equivalence class. Now, this guy here is G times GF, V prime, V prime. This is bigger than G of GF of V. So there will be some elements which are in here, but not in here. So what you do is you factor this by those elements. So up here you get G, well, let's say that G1, G2, and G3 belong to GF of V prime, but don't belong to GF. So here you get G1 of the same equivalence class, but now will be G2 of W and G3 of WG. All these will be contained in here because place is already contained. So now the maps are just a projection. These are this guy here.
I'm still sorry. The projection maps. What exactly do they do here?
It maps each of this. You can see it as a fiber bundle, right? So these are the fibers. So this map just picks an element of the fiber and it gives you the point. Those are these guys. This guy here is a G/G.
Yeah.
Yeah, eventually it does just give the restriction, but the kind of interpretation is this. Right. And this is exactly the same because there's a one-to-one correspondence, then you can use this presheaf or the Hom faithful representation are exactly the same. The advantage is that now in each fiber, yeah, you automatically get some topological information. I mean, you're already in group theory. Okay. So given this, we have defined presheaf. However, we still want to define this category C, this intermediate category. Now, remember that if you have a sheaf, you can do all this germ thing, blah, 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 and you get a bundle. Now, because we already have a presheaf, those things are the same. So for this presheaf, you obtain an Etal bundle. And this, the bundle space, is going to be the intermediate category. So the intermediate category, which I deleted, is the collection of all faithful representations. Now, I'll show you that this is actually a post set, but I'm just going to draw it again in a second. So this is your fixed category, V prime, et cetera, et cetera. And then up here, you get all your faithful representations. And we're going to use this as an intermediate category. So we're going to define sheaves over this. Okay, now first of all, this is a category. It is actually a poset. Why is that a poset? So you have to define an ordering. So now let's take two elements. This was g.gf of v. And let's take some small algebra. Now we already know that these two. So this is smaller than this, hence for the same element, there's an inclusion relation. So in theory, you could order all your elements here with this ordering. That's not good because it goes the wrong way around. So eventually, remember, we want to define presheaves over this. So whatever we put here, we want that the arrow go this way for this going that way. And we're always doing presheaves. So if you define that ordering, then the arrows here would go this way, which is okay for presheaves, but it's not okay when you want to define presheaves over that, because then you would end up. You want to get a presheave because of the sheaf presheave correspondence, etc., etc. So in order to make eventually get this ordering, you need at the level of category, and not at the level of the sheaf method, at the level of category to have the ordering going that way, so you simply reverse it. So if you have a partial ordering, inclusion is a partial ordering, then the dual is still a partial ordering. So you end up with this ordering. And WGV is now I forgot the other one. So the maps are restrictions. It's basically the opposite. And you can show that this is a well-defined ordering. Alternative, you can also define the order in terms of the representations. I mean, that is actually the same thing because of the isomorphism. So you can equally define this to representations. So imagine here. These are the same, right? Isomorphic, I'm just going to call them the same. But so this is still the projection map of that guy. So you define an ordering if, so this condition here is equivalent to saying that the projection of this is a subalgebra. Okay. So this is PJ. It's saying that phi I is here, so when projected down, it picks this, and saying that phi J is here, so when projected down, it picks something that is subalgebra. And then this is the same. So that by J restricted to this. It's exactly the same. It's just that you should keep in mind both pictures. Okay, so now we are here. So we forget about this for a second. And we're on this category. And this category, let's call it with its name. It's a pole set, so you can use it now to define sheaves over it. So we're now arrived to a situation which we can define sheaves over that category. Okay, what do we do with that? So we have all sheaves over V, all our theory, everything that we've done so far, was sheaves over this guy, the state space, truth, everything. So now we changed it. What do we do? Well, we have to define some way, so a functor, from the original topos to your new one. So that everything that you did so far, you just translated to something over here. How do you define this? You want a functor from the original topos to this new one. So what you do, you pick a sheaf here, and you get something here. No, sorry. This is a sheaf here. So as such, it has for each element in here, which is, you can see it as an equivalence class or as a representation, it will give you a set. So this guy is now defined for each of these things here. Now let us assume that this is a representation, so it's going to be a representation of some V. So let us assume that phi belongs to this. How do you define this? You basically define it as this sheaf here, but now acting on whatever algebra is picked by this representation. So up here you get for this phi, phi of V. And again, here you get A phi J of V. And this is well defined because it was already in here. It's your original one. What about maps? So we know that they follow this. Right? So if you have a map here, then you have that or this. So assume that you have I, J. So this will correspond to some V prime, this some V. What are the maps here? This I by I. Well, this is simply defined as follows. This now is phi, the big one is phi J, goes to I. So because they're defined, so let's say this is phi J, and phi I is on some subalgebra, then it follows that phi, not of B, sorry, B prime, that phi J of V is bigger than phi I of B prime. And because of this ordering, you also know that phi I is actually phi J restricted to this guy. So basically this map, so let's call this V1. V2 are basically just the maps in here. Because again, given all this construction, this will be a subalgebra of this. So it's exactly the maps that you had here. So what you end up is that now you get all these things. And the maps are simply old maps. These maps are simply the Presheaf maps. It's just that now for each V, you first get all possible representation of that algebra. And then at the level of set, you get the Presheaf evaluated on all possible representations of the same algebra. That's a bit. That's did a bit better. You get J, etc. So now you get all phi I that belong. I use interchangeably, it's just the HOM is too long to write. F of B of A of phi I B. And the same here. So for each algebra, you consider the representations. And for each representation, you get the value of the sheaf of that representation of the algebra. So you already start seeing what I meant before, that now your group acts here, shifts from one representation to the other. And now all the equivalent ones, which would have given you a twist if you hadn't done this, are now all in the same fiber. Now that this is a well-defined functor, okay, it is defined like this, but you also have to show, I mean, this is crazy. Oh, I forgot to delete that one. You also have to show, so for I well defined functor, you have to show that if you have two sheaves in this guy, then you get a corresponding map. That's quite a lot. Like this. Such that this diagram commutes. So, such that if a diagram here commutes, well, these are the perceived maps, bigger, smaller, then the application of the I functor makes this diagram. Sorry. This diagram commute. When our phi belongs to the fiber of B. This, I mean, if you apply the definition, you see it. This is very easy to see. It's all in the lecture, isn't it? And it is indeed the case if you apply all the definitions, because this is just really the same. Okay, it will be for a representation of it, but if you pick it, this automatically follows. Since it's for all V, then this will just be A defined as some other V, but. See. Okay, so this is a well-defined functor. However, I mean, as the picture tells you, okay, you can go down here, but so far, mathematically, I've already described that far. Right? We're still here. So how do you actually go down? I mean, pictorially, it's truly to see, but how do you do it mathematically? What you do is you have to use geometric morphisms. So what we want to do now is to go one step forward and go here. Well, one step back, I suppose. Sorry, this was not fixed. The original one wasn't fixed. They're the same, really. So we need to go from this guy to this guy. We want to do this step here. Now, how do you define maps between topoi? We did that at the time we did through geometric morphism, and a source of geometric morphism was the existence of maps between continuous maps between these categories. And we know that there is. This is just a bundle. So we know that we have this map, which is continuous. It was just a bundle map. So given that, then you get this. Get this guy. And this we did, yeah? It turns out you get also another one. So I think I get the stars right. It should be don't remember. Yeah, then the pullback is the top. Anyway, you get also another one. I think it's called Shriek, which goes the way we want and is the left adjoint of this guy. And it goes. It goes like this. And what this, so you also get this left adjoint of this. And what this thing does is exactly what we need. So how, so in the appendix, I prove how you define it for sheaves. Now I'm just going to say it in a kind of an operational way, I suppose. But the abstract characterization is proved is on the appendix. But what this does is the following. So just consider bundles now. So if you have some bundle, well, in this case is itself, but sheaf etal bundle. We have a bundle here that goes to this guy. What this map does, it basically composes it with itself. So you get PJOPA, which is now a bundle from. No, sorry, the notation's wrong. So PA is the actual map. Yeah? Something. So this composes it, so you get from A to B. Well, A is this thing on top. It just pushes everything down. Very simple. And because of that, the maps are exactly the same, just now pushed at that level. Okay. And this is pictorial. In the notes is the precise way. Okay, so by doing this, then you end up with, we started off with this guy, and this gave all this twisted presheaf that wasn't good. So we wanted to arrive to a situation in which you didn't get twists. And because the twist derived from the fact that the base category shifted around, you needed to fix your base category. But that wasn't enough, because if you just did that, then you didn't get any group action at all. So you had to go through this intermediate category, where the group does act, but it only acts on the fibers. And then when you get your final presheaf, this group action, vertical group action, translates in a group action within the same fiber. And this is, and then you push everything down and you get a presheaf on the desired base space. So for example, we had our state space. This now gets mapped to this. Two steps process, which so what is this guy? So now, this guy is now a sheaf over a fixed category and is defined on objects for each V. You basically get for all representations of that V, you get your original sheaf on whatever representation is picked up here. So basically, you get the spectrum of all equivalent algebras. And then the maps, huh? then you end up, j, no, still I. But this is a coproduct, so we did coproduct maps. This is loads of maps, but for each element in here, it would pick an element in there through the usual mapping. So an element here was some lambda, and this is just basically straight to lambda to some dj of v prime, if this was of vi of v. You just get a lot of maps.
So the maps go like to every single endless.
Yeah. This is so this guy here, this let's call it not F. It's like I of phi, what did I try to? I phi j. I v phi j v for all phi. Is literally the we did the coproduct of maps in the lecture. This is the coproduct of maps, and each map is the original one of this pre-sheaf. So you get as many as you have representations, you get mapped. So now, what is the group action on this? The trick is clear, right? So you get, this is fixed, you just get all possible representations, and then you get the spectrum of all unitary equivalent or whatever equivalent algebras. So then now, as we will see, the group acts here, but it never goes to some other algebra because it does not act at this level. Okay, so what is the group action? Oh la la. I'll just write the group action. So first of all, what's the group? The group is the most easy thing you can think of. It's a sheaf such that for each element you just get a group, and the maps are just the identity maps. It's very trivial. Then now you can actually define a group action on this guy such that for each V a given element, you get an element in here. So say lambda is going to belong to some then you act on it, LG of lambda. And now this is gonna belong to LG by I of V. But because here you get all representations, is still in, these guys are still both in here. Blah, blah. So you don't get a twist. Oh, you get like sheaves over sheaves. You don't get a twist. And it turns out that you can also, it's in the lecture notes anyway, you can define a topology on this guy by Clopen sets. And with respect to this topology and just the topology acquired from this, this action is actually continuous. And what you do is you do this process for everything. So you do it for truth values, you do it for the quantity object, you do it for proposition, everything. And it all works well. So you still get for each object something like this. But now for all of the objects, you can define a group action. If you restrict it to Clopen, then yeah. Well, at the level of this guy's, yes. Because so a subobject would at each V would be, again, blah, 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 so that this is a subobject of this guy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So at each. But then, you have to consider. But again, here you restrict to Clopen. So yeah, I don't know if you can define prototype on a sheaf, but this level, yes.
Maybe not a sheaf, but kind of
fiber lines. Ah, see.
That
would definitely
be open in the regular coproduct topology.
Yes.
There are things that are open in the coproduct topology that won't be open there.
Yes.
So
yes.
It's a coarse
topology. Yeah.
That's true.
And then one last thing that's interesting, that when you define, it's all explained in the lecture notes, but the nice thing is that the truth value of things up here is the truth value of your original stuff, but factored, I think, by the group. So the truth values are down here. Right? And here you don't have a group action. On your original one, you did have a group action, as it was. So you would get unitary equivalent group, unitary equivalent truth values. And through this, to that theorem, you show that this unitary equivalent truth values are actually the same. So it's the kind of that Dirac covariance sense, that exercise, right, that if you have this or this and you do things or ask questions, then you'd get the same thing if you had this. And this is what all this thing shows. So in a way, I mean, it's not just a trick to get rid of twists. It's also somehow, I mean, this is not quite clear how to do it, but you can somehow see how you're trying to define an equivalence version of quantum theory in a way. I mean, I'm not really quite clear on this, but I think you can somehow interpret it like that. But yeah, this is very new stuff. Is it clear? The trick?